Hi, I'm John Meacham, the host of Cadence 13's new podcast, Fate of Fact, on how America and its political parties got to where we are today. Available now on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome back. Final hour. Wow, this show has flown by. Hope you're enjoying it. I hope the bosses are enjoying it because, you know, I like being invited back. But always great to be on the air with you here in St. Louis and the 97.1 FM Talk audience. Thank you so much for tuning in and not touching that dial these last few hours. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon. And as I said, one final hour, and we are joined by Chris Klemm. He is the former Yuma Sector Border Patrol Chief, and he is joining us now to talk about Trump's choice, that is President-elect Trump, to you, for Border Czar Tom Homan. Chris, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Joe, and thanks for having me on. And boy, I tell you what, it's exciting times now. A lot of good movement heading in the right direction for America.
And that's what we like to hear, Chris. And before we talk about Tom Homan, let's hear him in his own words on cracking down on the border.
ICE is very good. The ACI used to run. We're very good at targeting. I can't explain a lot of what we do, but there's a lot of databases, a lot of information we have access to where it helps us locate these people.
He has already been, before the election even started, Chris, he has been all revved up on these mass deportations. What are your thoughts just generally on Tom Homan, Chris, and this move to start the mass deportations?
Well, I can tell you, I like Tom. I've known Tom for probably over 10 years. We worked together. We were both working in Washington, D.C. In fact, he and I were probably the only ones in the room that were actually, you know, law enforcement people fighting the then Obama-Biden administration. But I've maintained a good relationship with Tom. He's the real deal. He's going to focus on fixing things, not feelings. And that's important for law enforcement to get things done. In regards to the mass deportations, I mean, look, we've seen polls around the country that upwards of 70% of Americans support it. And I would just tell your audience that the focus will be on national security threats, public safety, criminal aliens, and those that have warrants of removal. It's not going to be rounding up somebody because of the color of skin, what the left will tell you. It's about really focusing on the threats to our security, both the public safety and the criminals. That's what ICE does, and he's a former ICE director, so he knows the job.
Chris, talking about knowing the job, in the last 4 years, how has the situation changed? What will Tom be walking into when it comes to this issue at the border?
Well, so he's going to be walking into a couple good things. Good thing, he's going to have an entire Border Patrol force that's going to be so anxious and so happy to go back to work and do what they signed up to do. He's going to have, a president, a House, and a Senate that's going to back, you know, the mission of this incoming administration to finish what we started as far as, you know, the wall, the technology, and things to secure the border. He's also going to inherit a target-rich environment because this administration has released so many people into the country that have no right to be here that meet those priorities, national security, public safety, and criminal aliens. So he's going to be able to get things done rather quickly. And, you know, we heard today, at least some sources reporting Governor Noem may be DHS secretary. That's a win because now she can reach out to her fellow governors, especially the Republican governors, and get that support from the top down in the state. So I think Tom is going to be inheriting a situation that he's going to be able to turn around rather quickly.
Speaking of turning that situation around, what is a realistic timetable? You know, we're hearing about these deportations, getting the people who aren't here legally out of the country. What is a realistic timetable, and how long into the term will we start seeing people leave the country?
Well, you know, it really kind of comes down to the demographics, right? There are a lot of people that have been caught and released by immigration agents like Border Patrol and ICE that have a notice to appear, and they are entitled to due process. They have the constitutional support. So they're going to be a limited group that we can touch. But those that have outstanding warrants, the criminals, those that are illegally here that have no status, we can get after them fairly quickly. So I would say within the first 90 days, you're going to start seeing a lot of targeted operations going after the known locations. We'll see people removed rather quickly. The other thing, too, to keep in mind, and we saw it under the first President Trump administration, is when he gives the green light to do something, it reverberates around the world. When he says, hey, we're going to stop things, we're going to see a flow decrease after he takes office. We're going to see people more than likely voluntarily departing this country because they don't want to get caught up in the criminal and administrative quagmire that could come to this. So I'm optimistic that there'll be some major movement beginning as early as 90 days, but the first year or two will definitely make some huge impacts in the overall illegal immigration. And just so your audience knows, this is absolutely necessary to maintain the integrity of our immigration system so we can clean house so those that have been waiting for years doing the right thing can actually get back in their rightful place in line.
Chris, this might be a roundabout question. I apologize. But, you know, we've heard so many times of illegal immigrants who have been, you know, arrested for a crime and then released because states like the one I'm broadcasting from, New York, have, you know, no bail release and they're just released back to the street. Federally, would that change? And is there a way to get a record of those individuals who were arrested and then released without bail because of ridiculous policies from states like New York?
Well, so to answer your question in short order, if it's a state level policy or district attorney policy or whatever, if it's at a local level, the feds can't influence that. That's the sanctuary policies that we're up against. But for those states that are Republican states that are not sanctuary states but have sanctuary cities, they can enact some things that actually demand cooperation. And so, yeah, we're going to have to deal with those cities like New York that aren't going to be play nice with the feds. But even Tom has mentioned, well, we'll just send more ICE agents and we'll be waiting outside the police station because we have a right to follow up with those type of things. We're actually obligated per the INA, the Immigration Nationality Act, for us to do this stuff. So a little work cut out for us. But once we get started, the message will be out.
You know, it's so discouraging. You mentioned like at the local level, we have a county executive here in Erie County, New York, who during the first Trump administration put a way to avoid ICE in English and in Spanish and put it on all of his social media. Like, to me, that's just so discouraging. And I wish there was a way the federal government could say, you know what, you lose your post if you do something idiotic like that.
Well, there's this place in the Constitution that says all enemies, foreign and domestic. And there's an example when you have elected officials inside the United States purposely trying to undermine our government. To me, that's borderline. You know, that is criminal. You know, I know that they're trying to do it from a compassionate sense, but that's a lawmaker purposely trying to undermine our sovereign laws of our federal government. And that's a shame. And I hope voters. We need to call out those people because it's those type of laws that end up when you have a Jocelyn Norgay, you have a Lincoln Riley murder, you have, you know, a Rachel Moran murder. It's those type of things. Same criminals that are Trinidad Aragua that are plaguing towns across the country. Violent Venezuelan gangs that are beating up people in the streets of New York. It's because of lawmakers like that that think they're doing the right thing when they're actually causing harm to their own citizen and further exploitation of the migrants.
Well, if next time you talk to Tom Holman, tell him right behind the Odyssey Buffalo Studios, there is a hotel full of illegal immigrants.
Oh, I will pass that along. I'm sure the ICE guys on the ground are anxiously waiting for Tom's leadership to give them the back end that they've been missing the last 4 years, along with the Border Patrol.
Now, Chris, you know, speaking of the border itself, you know, the border wall, we know it's not completely finished. Does that start getting, do the parts of that wall start getting built on day one?
you know, where we have the if there's still equipment and there's still opportunities, I think there will be. If not, they'll allow the local sector leadership to make plans. I think that part of the transition team, and typically what has happened is the operational plans will be updated, and we'll be telling the White House and the Border Czar, Tom Homan, what we need to finish what we started, and that will get underway. Now, because of contracts and contracts being canceled, you know, the president's not going to be able to negotiate a new contract until he takes office. So we'll slow roll it, but I can guarantee you the leadership on the ground is going to be locked and loaded, ready to go on day one with here's our requirements. And, you know, I would be hesitant to think that they're not going to give some green light. Like if I was back in office in Yuma and they said, Trump says, yeah, do what you got to do, I'd be stacking Connex boxes in those gaps like the governor had done before. You know, like, let's do something in the intermediate. But, yeah, it's just going to take a little bit of time. But I'm telling you, they're not going to waste it. It's just going to take time for government contracting. But as far as the initiative and the execution, they're going to start rolling out as quickly as possible.
You know, we focus so much on the southern border, and rightfully so, but there's also issues at the northern border. We've seen, you know, a over 100% increase in the last 4 years of people illegally coming over the northern border. Will that be something that will be focused on by this administration?
Absolutely. So we think we have what I will say, we do have the right formula of what it's going to take on the southern border. We have never put the energy and effort that it's needed on the northern border. And I think that's what Tom Homan will be charged with to address that. It's not as sexy. It doesn't get the attention like the southern border. But like you mentioned, those numbers, I mean, in the last year, there's been more than 20 years combined entries in on the northern border. So we've got a problem. The good news is we have a much better working relationship with officials in Canada and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police that we're going to get things done. I have spoken for quite a while. Once we figure out the plan and get to execute on the southern border, we can't wait. We have to start with the northern border as well, because there are threats we've got to address. But that will be a challenge because it's arduous. But at the end of the day, we've got much better cooperation with Canadian officials when it comes to getting this done.
You know, Chris, we're seeing the president put his administration together for the second term. What do you think are some of the lessons the president learned in his first term that are helping him make these decisions going into this second term?
Well, I think he understood or learned the hard way of how deep the state was, bureaucrats, and how they play the game. It looks like just over the last news cycle, the last 36 to 72 hours, you know, we've got potentially Marco Rubio as the Secretary of State. You've got Governor Noem as the potential DHS Secretary. You know, what that's telling me is a maturation, understanding government. For example, you know, a governor is the CEO of the state. They have to trust leaders and elect or put people in places and positions that run things and make decisions. And so plus financial responsibility. So I'm excited what he's learning. He's putting people in here that have been loyal to him, that are consistent with his plan, right? Like that didn't balk the system or buck the system. So, you know, I think that's going to be it. It's going to be people that he can trust, people that he knows, and you know, and not just trying to play nice. I think he's got a mandate to get things done. He's going to get people that aren't going to mess around.
I got to ask you, you speak of that mandate. Were you surprised with just how convincing the win was, not just for Trump, but for Republicans on election night?
Well, I tell you what, I spent the short answer is a little surprised that he won the popular vote. That was a surprise. I just didn't expect that. I was expecting California and New York to drive those numbers up for Harris. But I went to 19 states and over 50 cities in the last 14 months. And people on the ground were fed up. And I've spoke about the border. I spoke about the issues that this administration, the current administration, created. And so the ground game told me that there was a surge, that there was a red wave and a movement of people to say, hey, let's get this country back where it needs to be. So I wasn't surprised of the electoral win. I was surprised that how convincing he won the popular vote. So that to me was the one surprise. But boy, excited. A lot of calls, texts from people that are currently in the patrol, that are no longer in the patrol, but just like, hey, it's a good day for the country. So really excited to be associated with the success of this current incoming administration, should I say.
It sure is. And let me tell you, January 20th can't get here fast enough.
You're right. I ditto that, my friend. This is going to be a great thing for everybody. You know, I think it's going to right size where we've gone wrong in the last 4 years. And I think a lot of haters are going to look back and say, yeah, we're much better off today than we would have been under a Harris-Walz administration.
That is for sure. Chris Klemm, former Yuma Sector Border Patrol Chief, on the naming of Tom Homan and the new administration. Chris, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Joe, appreciate it, man. Thanks for giving me the platform and the audience. So I look forward to the next time.
You got it. Looking forward to it. Again, that is Chris Klemm joining us, talking about Tom Homan. And it seems every time I'm on the air, this comes up. You know, there is, and it's not an exaggeration, there is a hotel not even a mile away from where I am broadcasting that houses, I mean, the hotel has been bought out by the state of New York. Like, you cannot get a reservation at this hotel that is right by the studio. It is completely taken out by New York. They've paid for every room, and it's being guarded by, it was the National Guard, now a security team that New York is paying every day with my tax dollars to house these individuals. So that was not an exaggeration at all. When we come back, Steve Malloy will be joining us to talk about Lee Zeldin being named to the EPA and some of the climate issues that, you know, the policies that this administration has put in that maybe President.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hi, I'm John Meacham, the host of Cadence 13's new podcast, Fate of Fact, on how America and its political parties got to where we are today. Available now on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Trump can backtrack on, boost coal, and bring back the Keystone Pipeline. We'll be talking with him about that after this break. It's Beamer in for Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. We're in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. Great to be back on the air in St. Louis. Hopefully the technical issues don't deter me being asked back. But maybe it's not the technical issues, Joe. Maybe it's just your subject matter. Maybe. I don't know. We'll just have to go. It's great to be on here today, at least. And thank you for everyone back in St. Louis helping out with the early in the show technical issues that we had. Great crew, and always a pleasure working with you guys. We are joined now by Steve Malloy. He is a former Trump-Pence EPA transition team member and founder of JunkScience.com. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Steve, it was announced that former congressman and former candidate for New York Governor Lee Zeldin, who I have talked to a few times, will be heading up the EPA. What should his first line of business be?
Well, his first line of business is going to be to get our economy going again. And, you know, people don't think of the EPA necessarily in terms of the economy, but EPA has been a major weapon of Democrats against our economy through the war on fossil fuels. So there's a whole lot of things that he can do. We've got a clamp down on the EPA, and that will allow our energy industry to develop. But then we've got to also fix the EPA at the same time to make sure that our energy industry can thrive in the future.
What are some of these handcuffing regulations that the Biden administration has put on, and what did they put a stop to for things that President Trump had gotten going?
Yeah, well, originally, you know, it's really the started with the Obama-Biden administration, then went into the Biden-Harris administration. There was a brief, you know, too short interregnum there, 4 years with Donald Trump. You know, we in Trump one, we had rolled back a lot of the war on coal, war on energy, global warming nonsense of the Obama administration. But then Biden just rolled it back. So, you know, we're going to have to get rid of all that stuff again. The war on coal was especially harmful, especially in St. Louis. You know, the biggest coal companies that were headquartered in St. Louis, Peabody Arch went belly up. And so, you know, we've got to bring all this stuff back, especially coal. Coal is a great form of generating electricity. It's clean and it's cheap. And we should take all that wonderful natural gas we have and export it to Europe and Asia, where they're going to pay six times more for it than U.S. utilities.
You know, we hear so much about the Keystone Pipeline, Steve. What will it take to get that back to being a reality?
Well, you know, President Trump's going to have, you know, he's going to have all new appointees across all the agencies, including the agency that approves pipelines, FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. We're also, you know, and the environment's got to be so favorable that investors want to come back in, because the company that did Keystone XL, TransCanada, you know, it was, you know, Biden canceled their permits. They lost in court. You know, they're probably not interested in America anymore. But I think that Trump can, you know, change the environment, make it more friendly, and get people. And if not TransCanada, other people will build pipelines. You know, we need more pipelines. We need more fossil fuel plants. We need more fossil fuels. We need nuclear. Nuclear would be great as well. There's lots of things that can happen, but we've been held back for decades now by, you know, the regulatory establishment. You know, my bete noir is EPA. EPA does an awful lot of overregulation. They claim they're doing everything for public health and for the environment. Nonsense. Most of it's just for a political agenda. I've been working on EPA issues for 35 years. Most of what they've done, almost everything they've done, has cost more than the benefits it's produced. So that is one agency that you know, is going to have to be clamped down on.
You speak about, you know, the regulations, and I don't want to look too far into the future, and I don't want to think of this happening, but let's say 4 years from now, the Democrats are back in there. Is there a way for the EPA to push back on regulations that would make it difficult for another administration to just roll those back?
You know, yes and no. I mean, whatever one administration can do, the next administration can roll back, right? To really fix EPA permanently, we need to get Congress involved. Now, what I said is not exactly true, because we did have a lot of help from the Supreme Court during the Biden years. The Supreme Court came out with two very major decisions that are going to really hamstring EPA's ability to issue regulations. However, you know, the Biden administration was so rogue that it didn't even care what the Supreme Court said. So, you know, unfortunately, this is just the nature of America right now. We, you know, we're a polarized nation. I guess we're about equal vote wise. And, you know, it's going to be this tug of war until we get enough of one side to decide what direction we're going to go in. That's just the way it is.
Steve, how do we get states like the one I'm currently sitting in, New York, how do we discourage them from continuing with their EV mandate, right? I mean, in New York State, Governor Kathy Hochul doesn't want to see gasoline after 2035. How does the federal government make that so it's impossible for a state like New York to say goodbye to gas?
Well, all you got to do is take away the subsidies. Without subsidies, there's no EV industry, because there's nobody paying higher prices for EVs. It's just not worth it. You know, there's all sorts of money in the Inflation Reduction Act. You know, President Trump's position is that, you know, if we're going to spend that money, and we're talking about $1 trillion, if we're going to actually spend that money, then it should go to useful things like maybe infrastructure, but not EVs, windmills, and solar panels.
Speaking of regulations, which, you know, the EPA, when I think EPA, Steve, all I think about is regulations. It really doesn't go much further than that. But we hear so much about the Paris Climate Accord. What is the America's part in that right now, and how do you get out of it?
Well, so this is really interesting. The Paris Climate Accord, the Obama and then the Biden administration signed it as an executive agreement. So they didn't want to call it a treaty, because treaty would require Senate ratification, and they could never get that ratified in the Senate, even when Democrats ran the Senate. There's just not enough Democrat senators. So they've treated it as an executive agreement. President Trump in Trump 1.0 tried to get out of the agreement per the terms of the agreement, and of course that didn't work. Biden just brought us back in. So, you know, my recommendation for the president, president-elect, is that we treat the Paris Climate Accord as it is. It's a treaty. So it should just be submitted to the Senate. And once it's in the Senate, we're basically out of it, unless the Senate ratifies it, and there's no way that's going to happen.
No, Steve, I want to go back to the EV thing real quick, because obviously Elon Musk has been very close to President Trump, and you know, Elon Musk has Tesla, which are EVs. Is there any threat that Elon might get the presidency here and some of this stuff might go the way of EVs?
Well, you know, the president was pretty – he talked pretty tough against the EV mandate. He's not against EVs. He's against the EV mandate. I think Musk has a pretty good niche business going. He sells cool cars to, you know, wealthy people. He doesn't really need the tax breaks. He doesn't need the mandate. The rest of the EV industry does need tax breaks and mandates. So President Trump is, you know, apparently Musk is okay with getting rid of the mandate and the subsidies, because the subsidies are going to go away too. So if he's okay with that, well, you know, he's going to be able to sell EVs, which is fine. The problem is the mandate and subsidies.
We hear so much about, as you talked about, getting, you know, making America energy dependent again. I mean, it's just so interesting how people are actually against that. It never made sense to me. But being energy dependent, you have that fracking. How does fracking play into it? And is fracking a clean way to get oil, or does the other side have a point?
Yeah. Well, most people don't realize this. You know, fracking is not just some weird way of producing oil. It's how we produce 90% of the oil we produce. So if we're going to be energy dominant again, we need to do fracking. And there's nothing wrong with fracking. EPA, as hard as it's tried, even under Obama and under Biden, they're not able to shut down fracking because fracking is done cleanly. You know, there's never been any scientific evidence showing that fracking is causing any harm. You know, emissions-driven warming, of course, climate change, global warming, all that's a hoax. So fracking is just a fantastic technology. You know, Kamala Harris could never have banned it because the president can't ban it, but she could have issued, you know, she could have killed it through, you know, 1,000 cuts, all these different regulations. President Trump's not going to do that. He is going to, you know, he's going to boost all sectors of our energy production. He's going to get rid of the Biden moratorium on liquefied natural gas export terminals. You know, once, as I mentioned earlier, we need to be taking all that fracked gas and exporting it to Europe and Asia. Well, they'll pay a lot more for it.
Well, I'm happy to hear that, because as a Bills fan, our owner got his billions by fracking, and I would hate to see that go away.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you know, we're going to become energy dominant again. Prices are going to be fair. You know, prices can't go to zero, because then we're not going to have an oil and gas industry or a coal industry. So you got to pay. You got to pay a little bit. But, you know, you don't have to pay $5-6 for, you know, a gallon of gasoline. And we don't have to leave OPEC in charge of the price of oil. We should be in charge of the price of oil. When President Trump was president the first time, we were in charge of the oil. As soon as Biden became president, he put OPEC back in charge. Now President Trump is going to seize control of the global oil market again, and we are going to be largely in charge.
Now, I don't want to make it sound like I'm anti-EV, because if someone had a Cybertruck, I'd love to go for a ride in it. But, you know, we hear, and as you said, this hoax about global warming and the climate crisis and all this stuff. But when you look at the batteries of these EVs, when they've exceeded their life, when they're no longer useful, is it true these things are worse for the earth than gas and oil can ever be?
Well, you just can't throw them away. You can't just, like, put them in a dump. You know, if you've got lithium ion batteries for like your weed eater or whatever, you're not supposed to just throw it in the garbage, because they've got all sorts of, you know, elements and metals in there, minerals that, you know, can be toxic. So you've got to take care of them in a special way. You know, these things, battery powered stuff has their uses. It's not, I don't really see the advantage of, you know, EVs. What does it get you? It's not cleaner. It doesn't change the air quality. It does not change the climate. It just costs more. It's less convenient. But if you want one, you can have one. I just don't want to subsidize it. You know, I mean, the problem with all this stuff is once again, it's the government mandates and the government use of taxpayer money to subsidize it. That's why people are so, you know, riled up about EVs. You know, the government's got no, where in the Constitution does it say the government can pick and choose consumer products? Nowhere.
Yeah, Steve, how much money does the EPA take away, and how much could we take away from what the EPA takes away every year?
Well, the EPA's budget is about $11 billion, but that's just like the tip of the iceberg of what it costs us. I mean, it's got regulations that cost billions and billions and billions of, you know, countless billions of dollars per year, more than $100 billion a year. And, I mean, you know, this is hurting our economy. One of the reasons all our jobs have gone off to China and India and Vietnam and places like that is because there's no EPA over there. I mean, we have such, you know, strict EPA regulations. They don't even make any sense anymore. They just get tightened just because, you know, the bureaucrats have nothing else to do and they don't want to see their programs go away. They're not producing any public health benefits. They're not producing any environmental benefits. It's just all cost. And so one of the things, you know, President Trump can do is make sure that if we have new regulations, that the benefits actually exceed the costs, which hasn't been done since the Reagan administration.
Steve, before I let you go, there's one thing, and this is just curiosity on my mind, because we have a lot of them around where I am, and half of them don't work, and they can't replace them because the company that built them is out of business. Right. Wind energy and these windmills, how important is wind energy, and are windmills good for the environment or anti-productive?
Well, they're counterproductive. I mean, they don't, you know, once again, this is something that without subsidies and mandates, they don't exist. Nobody would have this stuff. Windmills permanently destroy the land. You know, even if you were to take the windmill down, you still have the concrete rebar foundation. And who's going to do that? And, you know, they kill birds in the ocean. They kill whales, porpoises, and dolphins. You know, the Biden administration permitted the offshore wind industry to kill twice as many endangered right whales as are thought to exist, thousands and thousands of porpoises and dolphins. It's crazy. It's not changing the climate. It's not improving the environment. They kill birds, you know, great birds, eagles, bats. I mean, it's just a disaster. Of course, what do you expect from, you know, government policy like that? So, you know, and President Trump hates wind, hates wind turbines. He thinks they're ugly. Plus, you know, they kill whales and all that kind of stuff. So, but, you know, we've got this law, the Inflation Reduction Act, that provides, you know, all this money, hundreds of billions of dollars for wind. So, and that money has been used to purchase Republican politicians. So, you know, it's not going to be that easy, because now we've got Republicans that, that live in states where there's wind. And so they defend the wind because it means jobs in their states. We've got to end this whole environmental scam.
Well, Steve, let me tell you this. I'm hoping the lessons learned in the first administration by President-elect Trump means that he can hit the ground running a lot quicker. And with the help of Lee Zeldin, I'm hoping for some great turnarounds at the EPA. And I always appreciate talking with you, Steve, and your insight.
All right, Joe, thank you
for all the work you do.
Yep.
Hey, welcome back. Beamer in for Reardon, final segment here on News Radio. Oh, I'm sorry, on 97.1 FM Talk. You know, I've never done that before, guys, and almost said the wrong call letters. I'm going to give myself a pat on the back. That's the first time I've been doing this now for over a year, and that was the first time I almost said the wrong call letters. And I didn't, though. I stopped myself. 97.1 FM Talk. It's been a fun time with you. I hope you've enjoyed the show. You know, I love this time of year. No, not the cold weather, or as Sue said in her traffic report, it getting dark at 5:30. No. I love the holidays. I love the holiday decorations. There's already a Christmas tree and Christmas lights in our lobby. I love the Christmas music. I start listening halfway through October. But, you know, with all that, I don't need the cold weather. I don't need the 5 o'clock, the sun's down, and it's, you know, it looks like the middle of the night. I'm weird like that. I love warm weather. I would, you know, escape to Miami tomorrow if I could. But I love the holidays. And I would be fine with a compromise, because I like a white Christmas. I like snow on Christmas. I'll take a compromise. Give me 2 weeks of winter, and then January 1st, it can go back to 75 and sunny, and I'd be a happy person. So that's the conflict that goes on in my head. I love this time of year. I love the holidays. nothing beats good Christmas music, which they're playing in the lobby here with the Christmas tree up and everything. The wreaths aren't up yet. Maybe that's next week. But I can do without the cold weather and the pitch black at 5 o'clock. I don't know about you guys. That's my take on the holiday season. But I'm not a Scrooge. I love the holidays. You know, I'm disgusted that there are people getting uninvited from Thanksgiving because of their politics. Like, don't you dare ruin my Thanksgiving. That's my message.
I want
to run the turkey trot, and I want to eat as much as I can. Don't ruin my holidays. But you know what? People up here, I don't know how it is in St. Louis. People here complain if it's above 60 in December. Not me. I'm in my shorts and flip-flops.
I'm right there with you. Bring it.
Yes, exactly. It doesn't take away from the holidays for me whatsoever. It can be as warm. I'll go lay on the lake if it's in the 60s, okay?
Yep. Totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, people go, well, Joe, how would you, you know, how is it Christmas? I remember a few years ago on Christmas Eve, it was 65 degrees. And, you know, wow. The hot dog stand, we have a place here called Ted's. The line was out the door.
I love it.
And people go, this is ruining my holiday. I go, so, you know, how can you listen to Christmas music when it's 65? What, you don't think there's radio stations in Miami playing Christmas music in the holiday season?
Exactly. And there are, I mean, this year it's been kind of blown away by the hurricane, so we may have to stay here. But yes, and they've got all the palm trees lit up. Perfect.
It's beautiful.
Yes.
It's beautiful. And you can be comfortable. I've learned to live, I'm 36 and in Buffalo, I've learned to live in the cold, but doesn't mean I like it.
Right.
And with that, let's go. Speaking of things people don't like, it's press conferences with Kareem Jean-Pierre, and that's going to be our cut of the day. Let's go to the cut of the day.
We know that today, a week after the election, President Biden and Vice President Harris had a private lunch. How awkward was that?
I don't even understand. Why would it be awkward?
Because
why would it
the president
be awkward?
Got squeezed why would, out for her, and then she kept him at arm's length, and then she lost, well, why, and now she's back.
Why would you characterize it as awkward? They have regular lunches. They meet and talk regularly. Why would you call it awkward?
So there's no weirdness about the way that things have unfolded.
Did you see them? Did you see them together yesterday as well, when they honored our veterans and were together during the day, making sure that we didn't forget the brave men and women that fought for this country? The president and the vice president had lunch today. They've had lunch many times. They have they communicate with each other regularly. They had an opportunity to discuss the last 70 days or so of this administration, how important it is to get things done for the American people. And that's their focus.
Yeah, you know, Kareem Jean-Pierre, I know you have to say the talking points. I don't buy it, because I saw Kamala Harris and Jill Biden sitting next to each other at that Veterans Day thing yesterday. And Kamala Harris shook everyone's hand and said hi to everyone except for Joe Biden. They couldn't even look at each other. So I'm guessing there's a little tension between the president and the vice president. The final cut 12. We got to get this one in before we end here. Cut 12 as well as part of the cut of the day.
We know that at some point during the last Trump transition, then President Obama warned Trump that the biggest threat to the U.S. at the time was North Korea. Is President Biden going to run through what he sees the biggest threats to the country are with Donald Trump?
I am not going to get into a specific agenda of what they're going to discuss. And this is very much to the question that I got from MJ. What does the president want to, what's the message he wants to send tomorrow? And it is to the American people, the importance of keeping the norms, the importance of having a transition that is going to be efficient. This is what the American people deserve. And that's the message.
It'll be interesting. You know, having lunch with the person who kept saying you were a threat to democracy. But we'll be following it and we'll talk all about it. Hey, it's been fun. Thank you, everyone. Fred, Sue, John, thank you guys so much. It's been a pleasure. Hope to be able to do it again real soon. Talk to you as soon as I can. Next time, it's Beamer and Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hi, I'm John Meacham, the host of Cadence 13's new podcast, Fate of Fact, on how America and its political parties got to where we are today. Available now on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.